Good afternoon. Hello, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and I am speaking to you today from BBS Radio Station 2, in case you want to go back and review the archives. I have pulled in my favorite guy, Kevin Annett, who has just been doing some phenomenal work around the world to bring forth the truth regarding the true core network of diabolical slave trafficking, child trafficking, satanic ritual, events that are going on around the world with the Vatican, with the Jesuits, with the Catholic churches. And he has quite a bit of information to release today. Things are moving so rapidly that we're probably going to be talking more and more with Kevin as the days go forth. And I wanted to get this information out to everyone today before he takes off for Europe, which is, I think everyone on the planet has their eyes open awaiting what will occur when he lands across the pond. So today is June 18th, 2014, just in case. I always like to give the dates so it's easier for people to find these in the archives. And I wanted to welcome Kevin. Thank you, Kevin, for coming on. Especially, this is kind of a last-minute impromptu interview, but as always, I enjoy speaking to you every time we do interview.
That's okay. It's great to be with you again, Alexandra.
Yeah, thank you. And so I have so many things I would like to ask you, but I want to start out with just kind of tying up some of the loose ends regarding what's been currently going on in Cham, Ireland, with the 800 babies that were found in the cistern that you were commenting on before. Is there any new updates regarding that?
There is. As a matter of fact, you know, if you follow the so-called mainstream, you don't get any of this, because the church and Catholic Church and the government in Ireland stepped in and did what they do in many countries, and that is, you know, the perpetrators announce that they're going to investigate themselves, and then they don't declare it a crime scene, even though there's 800 little bodies there. They simply say, we're going to take care of it, and the media has pretty much imposed a blackout on it. What we found out through our network, including people in the Garda, who are the Irish police, one of our sources there did tell us that they have gone in already. They've already done forensic examination of these 800 babies. And he said there's definite evidence of ritual killings, the way the bodies have been dismembered, the decapitations. These are newborns. These are not like small children. These are all babies, newborns.
Oh,
and found in a cistern in the St. Mary's home for unwed mothers.
Jeez. I mean, what an atrocity. You know, I'm sure many people are wondering, where are these babies coming from? And I wanted to ask you, how much information has come forth on the fact that a lot of the nunneries are actually being raped and then forced to have these babies just for the sake of sacrifice?
Well, what I put together is the fact that, you know, the story about pregnant nuns, it's part of their cover story. That does happen, definitely. Women are definitely abused in that system all the time. But so I don't want to belittle that. But the fact is that the volume of deaths, the fact that according to the records, and they've already published this in some of the Irish newspapers and some of the names of the missing, the records clearly show that these children were dying at a rate of 2 to 3 a day.
Oh.
Now, I mean, that you can't account for that from young girls who were pregnant and they were just aborting them or something. Clearly, this is part of the whole child trafficking and baby trafficking network that's rampant throughout the Catholic Church. All over the world, young girls who get pregnant are convinced to give up the baby, and then that baby goes missing. And they're not only just trafficked for a lot of money to orphanages and foster homes all over the world, they're also used in these satanic rituals and these other, any way people want to use children, they can get them easily through the Catholic Church. So it's part of a huge industry, actually.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't already have their own so-called adoption agency. You know,
they do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do they really? That's scary.
Well, to give you an example, there's a woman right here in Vancouver, Hannah Anderson. She came to me 3 years ago. She's in her 30s now, but when she was 16, she got pregnant. Her Catholic mother brought in the priest. The priest put her in a home right in Vancouver, run by the Catholic Church. It's still in existence. And at the home, she was brainwashed, basically. convinced that she would never be a good mother. She had to hand over the baby. She signed a paper where when the baby was still in her, she signed away the rights to that child. It's called the BFA protocol in the hospitals here, a baby for adoption protocol. The mother is given lactation suppressants. She's never allowed to touch the baby, and then it vanishes. She never sees it again. So it's baby trafficking, and it's massive. It's all through the Catholic Church all over the world.
Good God. I mean, you know, you just – it's just so difficult to wrap your head around this kind of stuff. I mean, the fact that it even happens, and it's like a daily event, an hourly event, mm-hmm. I should say.
Yep.
You know.
It's horrible. It's horrible when you imagine it. And, you know, I often say to people, well, of course the Catholic Church is officially against abortion because that would cut into their profit margin. They want these babies born so they can be trafficked. And this has spanned centuries. It didn't just start yesterday.
You know, that was going to be one of my questions, so thank you for answering that. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to ask you back was, what is the current status on Jorge Bergoglio? What's going on with him? I mean, I know that you had already presented the information in the common law court.
So-called Pope Francis, he's beginning to get quite desperate. He's making these increasingly erratic public speeches about how everybody has to join the Catholic Church or they're going to go to hell. Well, you know, he initially came across as the spin doctor. He tried to make the Catholic Church look like the good guy now, you know, that he's into liberal reform and everything. Now he's falling back on the old Vatican line that there's no salvation except through them. You know, how people can think there's salvation through a child murdering institution is beyond me. But anyway, that's their line now. And he's also, as people know, facing these charges in the common law court case going on right now in Brussels of complicity in child trafficking, the kind that we've been talking about. When he was a bishop in Argentina, he helped traffic the children of political prisoners. All of that's been documented, including with insiders who've come forward to give their testimony in Brussels. He knows that. The head of the Jesuits, who's also being named, Adolfo Pichon, he knows it. And as a matter of fact, a few weeks ago, he announced his resignation. Even though he had just been appointed head of the Jesuits, he's going to resign at the next Congress of the Jesuits.
I saw that.
So, I mean, these people are all responding to the fact that they know they're being exposed. And, you know, it's just a matter of time, I think, before Bergoglio himself steps down.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because so many people in the spiritual community tend to look at Bergoglio as maybe a potential walk-in, someone who is actually doing some light work through a very dark position within the Vatican. And I know that he has been quoted as saying turning his back on the people through one of the most brutal dictatorships down in South America during the time of Buenos Aires. And I was wondering, how is that playing out so far within the South American, you know, I guess I should say, how are they responding to him? Are they just buying all of his stuff, hook, line, sinker? Okay, I was wondering because...
No, you know, they have trillions of dollars at their disposal. They can buy any media coverage they want. I mean, they got Time magazine to name him Man of the Year. I mean, when you got that kind of money and influence, you can make anything seem like anything. And the reality is, on the ground, people have known about Bergoglio for many years. People aren't fooled in Argentina. They know what his track record is. And for people nowadays to think that he represents some kind of change in the Vatican, it's a completely uninformed, naive opinion, because when you look at what they're doing, simple fact is you do not rise up through the Catholic hierarchy unless you are actively enforcing their policy of protecting child rapists, the policy called crimen solicitanus. You don't get to be a bishop, let alone a cardinal or a pope, unless you're actively supporting that network of protecting criminals and child rapists. So, you know, they weed out the humanitarians at an early stage. I mean, you find this in any hierarchical institution. So it's just wishful thinking to think that about Bergoglio.
You know, and I wanted to have your opinion on this. You know, many articles talk about how he was a railroad worker who immigrated from Italy to Argentina, and that he was the first pope from the Americas and also the first Jesuit. What's your comment on that?
Well, just, I mean, you know, it's part of the spin they put out very quickly, trying to make him look like the man of the people, that kind of thing. That's to be expected, all that kind of propaganda. But, you know, the fact that he's the first Jesuit says a lot. I mean, if people know anything about the history of the Jesuits, they were created in the mid-1500s to not just counter the Reformation and kind of rising liberal opinion in Europe as people were breaking away from Rome, but their whole strategy, the Jesuits, was one of deception from the very beginning. And, if you read the Jesuit oath, it says they swear to be a humanitarian to the humanitarians, a Protestant to the Protestants, to fool and deceive in order to infiltrate and destroy all those who are enemies of the Pope. So you have to understand this is one of the oldest PSYOP operations in Europe and in the world. And, I don't know. If people know anything about history, the answer is pretty obvious, I think.
Yeah, it repeats itself, does it not?
Yeah.
Well, now, you did mention the part about why the Vatican takes a stance against abortion. Why are they against gay adoptions of children?
Well, I mean, they lose monopoly. I mean, it's like whether they used to burn people if they tried to translate the Bible into the language of the people so they could read it for themselves. The Catholic Church can never lose monopoly over an issue that they profit from. They profit directly from child trafficking in a big way. To do that, you need people submissive. You need them to not be practicing other lifestyles. I mean, it's just cutting into their hegemony. I mean, that's the general answer.
Mm.
It's the oldest mind control institution in our history, really.
Yeah, and it is the mind control.
It's
the
yes.
Matrix. I mean, this is definitely the ground floor part of the Matrix.
Yeah.
Now, what is going on with the discovery of the hunting parties? Now, I know that this was very well laid out by David Icke many, many moons ago, but the fact that you're coming out and releasing current information about this is just phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I got contacted about 3 weeks ago by a woman in the Netherlands. She's a retired lawyer and very credible. She's been giving me lots of names and dates and information about people. And essentially, this is what she told me, and this is up at itccs.org, our site, so people can look at this themselves. But she was married to a man who's part of this thing called the Octopus. That's the name for the criminal network, like the mafia in Belgium and the Netherlands. It's part of this thing called Ndrangheta, which is an Italian word. It's the name for the Italian mafia now, not the old Cosa Nostra, but the new mafia organization in Italy. It's the largest criminal body in the world, and her husband was part of this. Now, she was a judge at one point, and the way it operates is these criminals use judges, female judges, as their cover, their shields is the word she used. So they'd have an air of respectability, and behind it they can do all these operations. One of the operations includes these ritual sacrifices and the killing of children. Now,
Generally,
the mob uses this, as governments do all over the world, for political blackmail purposes. You know, they film politicians with young boys or involved in these ritual killings, and then they can control the politicians using this information. But what she observed on a number of occasions, this was in 2000 and in 2004, she saw these, not only the killing of these children who were taken out of juvenile detention centers. This criminal organization provides kids from the prisons. They go missing and never seen again. And she observed an actual hunting party. The people involved were people like Prince Frisio, who's was the younger brother of the present King of Holland, King Willem. Frisio died last year in the hospital quite suddenly. I think they were just cleaning house and getting rid of witnesses. But Frisio, the Prince Albert King Albert of Belgium, George Soros, the multimillionaire, they were all present because Soros is a friend of the wife of this Prince Frisio. Basically, they were hunting young boys. They shot them. They were running naked through the woods. The area was cordoned off by Belgian soldiers to allow this hunting to go on. They hunted these kids down, killed them, and then, according to this woman, she observed them cutting off their penises and using them as hunting trophies.
It is so vile. It is so vile that I just want to ask the people listening to this interview, can you for 1 minute think that these people, these beings are human? They are not human.
No.
It's period.
Yeah.
We don't even think this way. We are not wired this way. In fact, the other day I was doing some research And I looked up the definition of a sociopath. And I was kind of really going down that rabbit hole. And I found the true definition is one who is hardwired to the reptilian brain. Mm-hmm. Okay? There you go. There you go. So back to Frigio, I noticed that you had mentioned he was in a ski accident. And that is such a classic way to take out, you know, heads of states and things like that. So that was a big red flag. But tell me a little bit about George Soros. I mean, I cannot believe here's a guy that everybody just reveres his financial movement of, his portfolio, and he's fully involved in this as well.
Well, that's right. He's friends with the wife of Frigio, a woman called Mabel V. Smith. And he was present there. He was doing the hunting as well, according to this woman. Now, this happened on a number of occasions. It wasn't just one incident. It also happened at homes. These ritual killings happened at homes owned by this mafia group in Holland. And but the thing she noticed about George Soros is that he seemed to be in a directing capacity. He was ordering people around. He wasn't just an observer. He played a big part in these incidents.
Doesn't surprise me at all, considering the amount of money that he, attained.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and other people there included the present Prime Minister of Holland, a man called Mark Rutte, who, as a matter of fact, there's a Belgian politician called Laurent Louis, who named Mark Rutte and the Belgian Prime Minister as being involved in child trafficking. He was then he lost his parliamentary immunity. He was arrested, and now he's facing imprisonment for even talking about this stuff in the Belgian Parliament.
Now that's gotten a lot of press. What's going on in the Netherlands? Is there any more update on the latest with the royal family and the exposure of child trafficking with that?
Well, lots. I mean, this woman gave me literally pages of information, all the details, where these things happen, who's involved. It's the Belgian, Dutch, and British royal families are all interconnected. I mean, you notice Juan Carlos, he was the king of Spain. He just stepped down just a few weeks ago from his office. He abdicated.
I know. That blew my mind, Kevin. That was huge.
Yeah, so I mean, you see, they're all connected to these networks, and they know it's coming out now. The same way the head of the Jesuits resigned, Bergoglio will undoubtedly announce his resignation. He doesn't want to be arrested while in office any more than Ratzinger wanted to be. So all of these guys are toppling, but that's because it's so widespread now. Like, these things are beginning to be talked about in the so-called mainstream media in Europe. And now with Laurent Louis, a member of parliament, coming forward, the cat's really out of the bag. And all they can do now is try to intimidate people into silence again.
I was going to ask you about all these resignations, okay? I would think that many of us are thinking, wow, great, they've stepped down. But have they really? I mean, are
no.
they? It seems to me that the majority of them, I think you had mentioned in one of your other interviews that Bergoglio and Ratzinger, I think you were talking about Ratzinger and how he's actually just kind of hanging out within the Vatican, because if he was caught outside the Vatican, he might actually be arrested, right?
That's right. I mean, the Italian government's obligated to protect the Vatican. It's called the Lateran Treaty. Of course, that treaty can be revoked at any time, and some members of the Italian parliament have even talked about putting forward a motion to have that happen. But the thing is that all the indicators show that Ratzinger is, in fact, still probably the Pope, Pope Benedict. Bergoglio, Pope Francis, doesn't wear the papal ring. He doesn't live in the Vatican. He walks around, and, they play this up, making it look like he's a man of the people, but he walks around Rome without any security. They would never do that if the guy was actually the Pope. He wouldn't be allowed to do that if he was actually the Pope. And the cardinals have even disavowed statements he's made about policy. Well, he is the policy if he's the Pope. So, this makes no sense at all. And it does make sense if they're just doing a little fog and mirrors kind of game, which they specialize in. And, it's kind of like in a smaller sense, after I got fired from the United Church, all of the officials who had been involved in my secret firing after I began to expose the stuff about the murders in the residential school, every one of those officials who dealt with me all took early retirement. They just get them out of the scene. They get them out of the limelight, but they're still there. They're just not in a way that can implicate other people.
Incredible. Now, I have noticed that you've really put some very adamant appeals out to the public to step forward and provide any solid evidence. Do you want to reiterate that? Because I think that's probably one of the core strongholds in proliferating this movement of getting the common law courts across the world, not just the UK, not just the United States, but I mean everywhere.
That's right. Well, you know, the next step on this is realizing that we, the people, we are the sovereigns. Authority and law comes from us, and especially when the law is working against us and is endangering our children, we have to step up and take action. And we put out a call a number of months ago to have volunteers to help constitute these common law courts, not only as jury members, but actual sheriffs and peace officers. We've had over 300 people volunteer. Over half of them are in America. And I spent a lot of my time now organizing these groups, doing training for the sheriffs. We actually have 5 serving sheriffs in America presently working with us to train people basically how to enforce these warrants. When we prosecute, for example, known child raping priests, training people how to go in and perform citizen arrests, how to shut down those institutions that are trafficking children. This is a whole grassroots movement developing, and it's really exciting. I mean, people are so, I would say more than I've seen on any issue that I've worked in for years now. People are getting really excited and activated around that because finally they get a sense of their own power. They're not waiting for some politician. They are taking action in their own communities. And this is what's so exciting about what all of these crimes have triggered is this reaction I'm seeing in people all over the place.
You know, I would think that anyone who has a family member, a wife, even a husband, a brother, a sister, whatever, who has been subjected to any kind of sexual abuse of any sort would be hot to jump into something like this because it's really going to make a difference. And many, many people out there, I get emails all the time. How can I make a difference, Alexandra? What can I do? How can I make a difference? And this is one of the ways you can do it.
That's right. Well, first of all, people have got to educate themselves a bit. If the listeners go to itccs.org, in the right-hand margin, you'll see a thing saying the community training manual. And just read that. It's like a 20 or 30-page little manual. It gives you the background. What is common law? Why and how we can go about setting up common law courts? How to identify the issues in your community? All you have to do, you issue a thing called a notice of claim of right. And it states that we want to adjudicate this matter. We want to pursue these criminals. We name who they are. And we need 12 men and women to step forward and be part of a jury. That's how the process starts. It's something anybody can do, and especially parents, especially people whose children are, every one of them is endangered, you know, by these trafficking networks and these killers.
I agree. And in fact, you and I need to finish up what we started. So that'll be for another interview, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I keep
for sure.
Yeah, that we need to get that going.
Yep.
Now, what about this Adolfo Pichon? I was kind of doing a little searching on him. He's supposedly the Jesuit head. He's standing trial in absentia. Now, tell me a little bit about how is that playing out? Is it the same as the others? I mean, considering the position that he holds within Rome?
Well, you know, people always talk about the Black Pope. Now, that's referring to the Jesuits because the Jesuits always wear black robes.
Right.
And so the Black Pope is traditionally supposed to be the one who actually runs the Vatican. It's not that simple. There's different factions in the Vatican. The Jesuits definitely hold a big role financially and politically. They have for centuries. They, in fact, helped set up the Illuminati in the year 1774. You know, they've been politically behind a lot of maneuvering in the world. So they're very important, very powerful. I mean, you know, financially, they own Citibank, the Bank of America. They have their hands in many of those pies. So I didn't want to kind of de-emphasize their role, but the thing to understand is that there's this big movement in the Vatican coming out of the so-called Third World. And they're at odds with the Jesuits to some degree. You know, it's kind of like the old guard versus the new guard coming in. They represent the same thing, but they've got different tactics about how they want to go about things. And there's definitely that power struggle going on right now in the Vatican. The Pichon himself, again, he's got a pretty dirty record when you look into his past. He's linked to a number of these dictatorships in Latin America as well. As a matter of fact, he played a role, one of the chief advisors now to Bergoglio, is a Honduran bishop. I'm trying to remember his name. I can find that for you. But the military overthrew the Honduran government in the year 2006. The Jesuits got in there and made sure the military stayed in power. And they acted like their PR frontman, just like Bergoglio did in Argentina during the Dirty War, you know, when 30,000 people were killed. He was in there creating a nice public face for the junta to the world. They did the same thing in Honduras. Pechon was engineered all that. So, I mean, it's the same old dirty tricks they've been doing, you know.
Jeez. And I know that probably one of the biggest headlines, you have reviewed this before, but I wanted to ask you, is when Archbishop Robert Carlson out of Minneapolis came out and stated that he didn't recall whether he knew doing sex to children was against the law.
Unbelievable.
I know. And it was almost to me as if it was divine intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
it really brought, I mean, anybody, I don't care how asleep you are, that would be a moment of like, oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, you've got to be completely dead not to look at that and have major questions. I mean, the thing to understand, first of all, it's kind of like you could say maybe energetically or spiritually, we're in a time now where nothing is being hidden anymore. It's all out there for people. Everything is being revealed. He is honestly saying, as Carlson said, no, it's not a crime to rape children in the Catholic Church, and we don't think it's a crime. You're raised in the culture, and you generally don't think there's anything wrong with it. You can say a Hail Mary and get forgiven and then go and do it again. That's the way it works. So when he, you know, that bit of honesty coming out of him is really an accurate description of this institution and what it represents. So he, all during the 1980s and 90s in Minneapolis, he was protecting child rape and priests. That's his obligation under church law to do that. And so, I often say, well, how can you, anyone with a conscience in the church, look at that and still be part of it? It's mind-boggling to me.
It's repulsive. I think, wasn't there also a big sting operation or a big cover-up in Boston, Massachusetts?
Yeah, well, you see, all over America, like all over the world, we estimate up to a third or a half of all Catholic priests are actively engaged in child trafficking. So not just, you know, the public image is, yeah, they're these bad apple priests and they rape kids and then they're dealt with, right?
Right.
Quite the contrary. It's a whole network. Proof of that is in the trial of William Lynn, who is a Monsignor in Philadelphia. He's the only Catholic prelate ever to go to trial or jail for protecting child rapists in the church.
Wow.
In the trial, William Lynn's trial 2 years ago in Philadelphia, the prosecution showed that over a third of all priests in Philadelphia, hundreds of priests, were actively passing kids around, young boys mostly. And this was common practice. So when this first began to surface in Boston, like 15 years ago now, there was an enormous spin operation that went in. And, you know, the Boston Globe and others were, again, the Vatican bought media coverage. They bought reporters to make it seem like these were random occurrences and they were trying to work with the police to get to the bottom of it. Quite the opposite. I mean, they have an obligation. If you don't cover it up, you're excommunicated. It's that simple. It says that in canon policy.
That's incredible. Now, you know, not to backtrack, but I do want to bring up the resignations again. And I found this on so-called Vatican Radio, okay? It says, quote, no pope has resigned in almost 600 years, but Pope Benedict's surprise announcement is not entirely unprecedented. More than 260 men have reigned as pope since St. Peter was martyred in Rome in the third decade after the death of Christ, and at least four of them have resigned. Any comment on that?
Well, I mean, again, it's their fabricated history. There's no connection whatsoever between the Roman Catholic Church and Christ, let alone Peter. You see, the Roman Catholic Church is a different species altogether. It's really the Roman Empire. They murdered the Christian Church
right. And
created this thing called the Roman Catholic Church in the 4th century. It's the corporation of the city of Rome. And it's the Roman Empire with a Christian veneer on it. Not even a Christian veneer, because when you look at the belief system in the Catholic Church, they don't believe that Christ is the intermediary between God and mankind. It's the Pope. And that comes not from a Christian belief at all, but from a Roman belief. It was called the doctrine of Deus et Dominus, which means Master and God. Emperor Aurelian, who was the guy just before Constantine who made the Catholic Church legal, Emperor Aurelian declared himself to be God master of heaven and earth. And he was the intermediary between the gods and the people of Rome. He took the title Pontifex Maximus, the Great Bridge. Okay.
Oh, God.
That's the official title of the Pope. You see, these guys are Roman emperors, modern-day Roman emperors. They have nothing to do with the Christian tradition. So that's all you have to do is look at that and realize, well, they can say and do anything they want, but they had to create this fiction that they're somehow the descendant of Christ. There's no evidence at all that that ever happened. And yet it's kind of like the doctrine that it's called the Donation of Constantine. There was supposed to be this document whereby Emperor Constantine granted to the Catholic Church all of the property and wealth of the Roman Empire. They prove that that document was written 800 years after Constantine. That's been proved by scholars all over the world. Yet that fiction is the lie, you know, the lie on which the Catholic Church claims authority in the world.
Right.
You know, it's all an enormous lie. It's the biggest lie in human history, yet people fall for it because they've been taught to believe it, you know,
yeah,
from a young age.
And we really truly are at a time where we are questioning everything. Anybody who's on the path of seeking truth, even that which you claim to be true within your own life, is being shattered right now because of all the other things that are coming forth. So, you know, I thought it was interesting. I wanted to ask you, that announcement of Pope Benedict supposedly resigning came in February 11th of 2013. That same period of time, Ratzinger resigned. What went down around that time? I can't remember. What was the reason for the both of them coming forth to say that?
Well, because we were about to announce the verdict from Brussels in the first common law court case.
Okay.
The verdict came out February 25th. Ratzinger resigned 2 weeks before it came out because he knew he was going to be found guilty for these crimes. He didn't want to be in office when in official office when the verdict came out, because at that point there could be an arrest warrant issued.
Okay.
We know that for a fact because Tarcisio Bertone, who was the Secretary of State kind of managing all that, he had been named in our indictment, and he also resigned after Bergoglio came in. So these guys have all stepped down because they know they're guilty. I mean, that's the main proof you have, right?
Interesting. And what about the resignation of Archbishop Jose Cardoso Sobrino of Olindo? Does that ring a bell with you?
I think he's the one I mentioned earlier, unless I'm mistaken, the Honduran. But again, it's part of this whole network.
Okay.
I remember reading about the way they used to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan and break it up when the FBI, you know, in the 60s were briefly going after the Klan. They would find a loose cannon, the weak link in the local Klan chapter. And once people knew that guy was informing to the feds, everybody started running for the hills. It's the same thing here. When you infiltrate, when the criminal body starts collapsing like that, everybody is worried about their own complicity and they all start resigning. That's exactly what we're seeing these days coming out of Rome. So that's the proof. You know, it's not something they're going to admit. It's just the proofs in what they do, right?
Right. Well, I mean, it's what we can hang on to see that there is some progress going on. You know, there's some upheaval going on within the Vatican itself. I want to go back to, like, back in January, you know, you had that big fiasco with the financial guard. Remember, what was his name? There was a resignation of Cardinal Attilio Nicora, who was the president of the Vatican's Financial Information Authority.
Right.
What's going on with that now?
Well, that's part of the bigger geopolitical thing going on. There's a big shift, of course, as people know, towards Russia and China. They're forming this new kind of power block in the world.
Yeah.
And the Vatican wants to cut in on that. The Vatican has opened – this is very odd. It's never happened before in history. The official – State Catholic Church in Beijing, which is set up by the government, has been recognized by Rome as the official Catholic Church, even though it's run by the Chinese government.
Right.
They've been transferring, according to the reporters in Rome, hundreds of millions of euros have been transferred out of the Vatican Bank to Chinese banks and German banks. And the German connection is interesting because it's, you know, showing that Ratzinger is still playing a big role in this.
Yeah.
The top advisors now are all Germans. I mean, this is, and Germany is switching its way towards Russia. It's kind of a shift happening in the world. There's going to be the whole Russia-China, apparently Vatican bloc versus the West. And that's why both Obama, Queen Elizabeth, all the Western leaders are being paying visits to Rome to try to keep the Vatican on side. I think that's part of what we're seeing.
In fact, you know, you just read my mind because I wanted to ask you, what is the significance of this big hoopla being made about the papal trip to the Palestinian territories?
Well, the same thing. I mean, you know, the Middle East is pretty key geopolitically to a lot of this stuff. And he's, you know, like it's what I said earlier, Bergoglio was desperate to get everybody on board with this new alliance. He says everybody's got to join the Catholic Church now, the Anglicans. He's even talked about the Muslims being baptized. And there was some bizarre news report about him talking about extraterrestrials would have to be baptized. I mean, you know, sometimes I think these guys are all just nuts. And I, yeah, definitely he's desperate to get everybody involved in their new little power block. And this is part of what we're saying, you know.
Yeah, I guess the other thing I stumbled upon was he has another visit slated for South Korea, August 14th through the 18th.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting because he says he's going to be working with 124 Korean martyrs. I'm thinking.
Well, you know, I mean, North Korea, like Albania at one point and everything, they're the bad boys. They're outside the power block and the financial block. So
right.
He's helping isolate them. I mean, he's doing what's required by this new power block. And I think when you look at it in a geopolitical sense, and not just in terms of Vatican politics, you'll see that, I mean, you know, they're one of the biggest financial powers in the world, the Vatican Bank. And combine them and the Catholic population with the Chinese population, and you've got a very powerful power block in the world, right?
You know, it'd be very interesting to see if this huge amount of money that's being transferred from the Vatican to the Chinese establishment that you're talking about, be very interesting to see if that by any chance ends up biting them in the you know what.
Oh, it always does. I mean, as a matter of fact, they, you know, a lot of the money, we did a calculation one, and according to the Catholic Church's own records, in 2013, the Catholic Church in America alone brought in $170 billion in revenue.
Wow.
Less than 1% of that went to charity. So when people always say, oh, well, you know, they're doing such good works. No, I mean, it's window dressing. And as a matter of fact, half of that 1% was from the federal government in the form of grants. So half of a percent of what people put in the collection plate and what they make off their various means – it's all going to the Vatican Bank and to pay off these banksters to invest in Monsanto and the arms industry and, you know, all of the stuff that they're in, their dirty stuff they're involved in. That's where all the Catholic money is going. So when we say, well, it's time to cancel the tax exemptions for these criminal body and people say, oh, no, it'll hurt the local orphanage. Well, wake up, people, you know, where it's really going.
Well, and that's why I was wondering if his trip to Palestine, and he also mentioned Israel and how he was actually going to have some sort of peace talk between both countries. I thought to myself, oh, wow. Okay, so this is like a blatant presentation that they are, in fact, you know, providing the funds to keep this war going. And the atrocities that are going on right now within Palestine are horrific,
exactly.
Kevin.
Yeah, the Vatican is a big war profiteer. People have known that for a long time. I mean, the biggest small arms company in the world, Beretta Limited, is 100% owned by the Vatican. They've got a deep interest in the arms industry and in wars, just like bankers do all over the world. So that's part of it. But, you know, it's kind of like Machiavelli had the old saying that when a prince, in his book The Prince, it was kind of like advice to 16th century tyrants in Italy about how to operate. And in The Prince, Machiavelli says, whenever you are weak, feign strength. You know, so, I mean, Bergoglio is in a very weak position. He's got to appear like the big diplomat who's mediating all the conflicts. I mean, that's part of the game, you know.
Right, right. Now, what about, just to follow up on an old headline that we had sort of talked about, what is there any feedback on your end regarding the kidnapping of the missionary priest in northern Cameroon? What was that all about? Was that just, you know, basically?
I didn't follow that story, actually.
I'm curious. That was like something that came up. And then I thought this was very interesting since you and I are talking today, that they came out with a headline today that there's a report that Pope Francis is ill, saying that the curtailment of the public summer schedule is common for many popes, and that they're denying the fact that he is ill. There is no sickness whatsoever. If there was, we would be open about that and making people pray for him.
Well, that's the what the spin doctors always do. They put out a test story to see how people react to it. They're definitely going to remove him. Ratzinger has been pulling the strings all along, I believe. Bergoglio is in there just for a little while longer. Now they're testing waters to see, putting out these stories of his resignation. He's facing prosecution right now in Brussels. Of course, they're not going to keep him in there.
No. And now, what's the latest where Francis said that he was going to meet with the group of sex abuse victims? And that was back on the 26th of May. Any comments?
That's chilling.
Really?
Chilling. It's like there was a picture of him the other day with sitting there on his papal so-called throne, and there were these 5-6-year-old children sitting at his feet. I mean, it's their way, it's their message of saying, we're in charge, boys, and we're going to do whatever we want to these kids, and here's the proof. You know, when they're meeting with the survivors, it's their code word for saying, just like they did in Chom, Ireland, right? We are doing our own cover-up of this thing. If you cooperate, you'll get a bit of money, just like that happened with the natives here in Canada. You know, play along, don't talk about murdered children, you'll get a pat on the head and a little check and go away. I mean, this is their whole strategy when it comes to their victims.
And I mean, it's so audacious. I mean, he's quoted as saying that the abuse of children by priests is such an ugly crime and a very grave problem. The betrayal of the priest's duty to lead young people to holiness is comparable to the preference of a black mass. Now, what do you think he means for that?
Again, that's what I'm talking about. You see, they let out these clues. Why would he even refer to a satanic mass in connection to the abuse of children? That's his way of saying, yeah, it's true what you're saying. Child sacrifice is inseparable from the rape and trafficking of children in the Roman Catholic Church. It goes on hand in glove alongside it. As a matter of fact, the so-called satanic mass is modeled directly on the Catholic mass. You know?
Wow. Now, what about, tell us a little bit about the Holy See. You know, I think that's very interesting, Kevin, because that gets back to admiralty law, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much. I mean, these terms aren't accidental.
Right.
Thing to understand is the Roman Catholic Church ended in the year 1870. Giuseppe Garibaldi, he united Italy. He was like the George Washington of Italy. And yet today in the schools, he's never taught about in Italy because the Catholic Church made sure that never happened. But anyway, he united the country. He disestablished the Vatican. The Papal States were abolished. From 1870 to 1929, when the dictator Mussolini established the Vatican, there was no Catholic official Catholic Church. The Pope was in prison, basically. There was no Vatican. The Vatican was created by Mussolini the year 1929 and the Vatican Bank, and so was this thing called the Holy See. Now, the Holy See is the diplomatic aspect. It's the thing that people have diplomatic relations with. You know, it's the political front of the Vatican. But these are just words. I mean, it's a corporate entity.
Right.
It doesn't really exist. The Vatican doesn't have the status of a government. That's a fiction.
Right.
But the governments of the world play along with it. They have none of the characteristics of a nation, yet they pretend to be a nation. And, you know, it's part of the whole game that's played. But the thing to understand is the Vatican is the creation of fascism. And fascism was the first corporatist model in the world. It's basically where you have this absolute tyranny, you know, the corporate and government sector unite into this monopoly, this oligarchy that controls every aspect of life. That's what we've got in the world now. We don't have governments. We don't have democracy. We have oligarchies, corporate oligarchies. It was modeled by the Vatican. They've set up that model all over the world. So this is what we're dealing with, and it came out of Rome.
Yeah, and its tentacles go far and wide. In fact, I remind people all the time about, you know, the 501c3s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically,
yep.
People are saying, oh, I just want a tax donation receipt, you know, from tithing to the church. Well, that wouldn't even exist without the 501c3 classification through the IRS.
Right. Well, this is, you know, brings us back again to the whole thing of common law and the need to reclaim our countries. We're living under de facto corporate oligarchies, governments, you know, courts themselves. Here in Canada, they've removed all the Canadian flags from the courts. There's just the symbol of the City of London up there now. these are private commercial courts. So with the common law, we're not doing anything radical, or even it's not even simple disobedience. We are establishing, reestablishing the rule of law. Under the U.S. Constitution, every citizen in the Sixth and Seventh Amendments of the Constitution, people should read it. It says you are guaranteed jury trial under common law, and no court can subvert that. That's your constitutional right. And any court that tries to subvert that is an illegitimate court, right?
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, this is what we're doing. We're just trying to reestablish lawful authority, which we don't have right at the moment.
It's very exciting. I mean, we truly are in a grassroots position right now. And now all of those that really want to take action, they are perfectly capable of doing so, because there's enough of us now that are banding together to get this off the ground. And again, I thank you, Kevin, for all the hard work that you've done and the passion that you've displayed to all of us. It's contagious. It's fired all of us up to take more of an active role. So I commend you. Now, I wanted to ask you, can you tell us a little bit about who is behind the UN Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, and Degrading Treatments?
Who is behind it? You mean who authored it?
Yeah, who authored it and who's in it? Like, who's actually determining what's degrading and inhumane?
Well, the thing about the United Nations, it's its creation of the International Monetary Fund. People like George Soros, the billionaire child killer, he in fact founded Human Rights Watch, which is seen as the big human rights group around the world next to Amnesty International. Both of them are set up with Soros money. You see, these things are put in place to divert genuine attempts for justice. We found that right away, and the proof of this is when we first began 15 years ago, when I first began to bring evidence of genocide in Canada against the Native people, we took it to the United Nations. It was never picked up by anybody there. It was, and I've seen up close how this operates. It's shifted around from individual to individual, but it's never taken into any arena where anyone could do anything about it. It's, you know, they send what are called rapporteurs from the UN into countries to do investigations, but then, fine, they write a report about it, and then nothing ever happens. I mean, it's designed, like, to just sidetrack any effective action, and to also, in the process, identify people involved in trying to bring about change and isolate them and eliminate them. This is what a lot of these so-called group, you know, human rights groups and that do. They monitor, just like the police do. They monitor who's doing what, and they know who to isolate and who to discredit.
It's amazing. So really what this is showing is that we need to start from a completely fresh, clean slate and create our own grassroots groups. I had a couple of questions for you on that. Number one, how are you screening the people that are coming in to volunteer their time and effort with you?
Well, we let them screen themselves in the sense of, as small groups, you know, this is just beginning. The thing, and the FBI have developed this and other spy agencies to a fine art, divide and conquer methods. You destroy a small group by planting suspicion and doubt about each other. And so you get somebody to say, you know, I don't know about him. He's kind of funny. We've got to find out who the police agents are. You can never find out who the spies are. They're there. That's fine. You educate them. You get them on board. You get them to work for you. You got to admit, just accept the fact that that's going to happen. What you do to counter that is to stay public. You stay on the issue. You keep the moral high ground. You don't, when people call me names, I don't call them names back.
Right.
I keep the high ground. I ignore them.
Yeah.
And they say, if you're concerned about this issue, work with us. These differences will be worked out in practice. Let's stay on the issue. That's how you can measure whether someone's legitimate or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, by keeping that moral high ground, I find that these tactics tend to fall away after a while. And, you know, we've seen how to counter that is through appealing to the hearts and minds, even to the people in the system, because like I said, we've got sheriffs on board with us now. We have people in the system realizing how corrupt and dirty it is and needing to help us. So you just maneuver around that. And the important thing is to always stay public and be in a way that where you can help people directly. I mean, we have people right now who are suffering from, you know, being persecuted for some of this stuff. We have this soldier in England, Vivian Cunningham, who was thrown in a mental hospital, right? He's out now. In fact, I just got an email from him. We created an enormous stink, and we had people picking in the mental hospital and everything. He's out now. They can't stand that kind of public exposure. You know,
right.
This is supposedly all-powerful system. They hate it when people start doing that. So we go to bat for people, and that's before that happened to Vivian, there were only a couple of dozen people working in the Coventry Common Law Group that's associated with us. They've got 200 people now signed up to their June 21st conference they're having on the common law in Coventry. So the repression can help us, you know, as long as you stay public about it.
Right on. You know, I feel like I was a little piece of that because I really tried to fire people up to make some phone calls and appearances for those that were in the United Kingdom. I thank you again for taking action. We are so appreciative of that. Now, what other groups, Kevin, are out there that are springing up, that are actually working alongside you, that aren't necessarily part of so-called ITCCF?
Well, there's groups all over. One of the big groups in America that people should know about is called the National Liberty Alliance. You can look that up, the NLA. I don't completely agree with their approach. I mean, you know, we all have differences about how you approach this. They try to work in the system. For example, they set up common law courts, but then when the matter is adjudicated, they take the verdict back into the de facto courts.
Oh, my God.
The ones that exist right now for a final judgment. Well, the minute you step into their jurisdiction, you've relinquished your own authority, and you're depending on them for a final judgment. You're kind of handing the authority back to them. So I say to the NLA people, look, there's no need to do that because under the Constitution, we have the right to establish these common law courts and defend them. So there's no need to do that. So, I mean, you know, we have differences like that, but the NLA is active in every state. They are setting up common law, you know, courts, and we're working alongside them. People who often work with the NLA all also work with us. So I don't believe in causing divisions. I think we've got to, you know, admit our differences, but continue to work together.
Sure.
on all of this stuff.
Sure, because it's ultimately all going to work cohesively together in a, you know, in an illuminating way, period. You know, however people end up finding the truth, at least it's a beginning. So, well, you did mention, you mentioned there was a group in France, that something Lagarde or...
Well, there's groups all over the world. We've got over 50 groups affiliated with us now.
Wow.
In 21 countries.
Now, where is that information, Kevin?
Pardon me?
Where is that information on your site so people can get
Right at itccs.org. You see, there's been a lot of caution on the part of some of these groups in Europe coming forward too quickly. You saw what happened to Laurent Louis, the Belgian member of parliament.
Yeah.
This has happened to other people who have come forward too quickly. So a lot of these groups aren't public yet. They're working, which I agree with, the whole strategy. You build a whole base and then you go public, rather than doing it the other way around and then getting knocked out. But to give you some examples, there's a group that's formed now in Chaum in Ireland that are doing their own inquiry. They've set up the Irish Common Law Court. There's Debout les Belges, which means Arise Belgians. It's a movement set up by Laurent Louis and others that are going to take our model. I'm going to be meeting with Laurent Louis in about 10 days in Brussels.
Right.
And we're going to be launching this thing. It's a kind of a whole citizens movement to bring the common law, you know, into their situation. There's groups in Australia, New Zealand. I mean, I'm constantly flooded every day with people wanting to not just affiliate with us, but set up their own movements. You know, this is there's actually too many to describe.
Yeah, but that's good news. And the fact that we are finally going back to unifying from the core of humanity rather than looking to someone we perceive to be our superior to call shots, and we're giving away our authority every time we do that. The only way we're going to be able to take down this matrix is if we start empowering and taking back our own authority.
That's the whole point of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though ultimately, the whole point of this is to recognize that we are, as you know, John Adams said this in the one of the founding fathers of America. He said, "America is unique in history. It's never happened before. Every man and woman is a sovereign. There is no authority over them. They are their own authority, and they covenant together to establish a community based on that. And out of that arises government. But when government subverts that, there is no more government. It can be overthrown justly and lawfully." And that's the state we're in now. It's come full circle. We're under a tyranny just like our ancestors were, and we've got to take back that power. It starts within. You know, as you and I have talked about, it's a spiritual process. It begins within us. It's reclaiming our own minds and hearts and souls. And from that, it's obvious. It gets clear. You know, people often say to me, well, what do I do next? I often say to them, ask your conscience what you do next.
Yeah.
That's your best teacher, not me. I mean, I can give you some tips and experience, but it's your conscience that's your guide in this.
Yeah, this is really one of the precursors to fully becoming awakened to who you really are.
Yep.
And people have heard, especially from the spiritual side of things, people are constantly hearing about, well, ask your guidance. And many people come back to me and say, well, gosh, I don't really have a guide, or I don't really talk to anyone that, yeah, yes, you do. But what we're being pushed and nudged by the energies, by the movement of the changes going on within this matrix, what we're being pushed to do right now is to stand in our own truth, period.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
Instead of being sheeple, which is what we were created into being, because what we represent, generally speaking, across the planet, is not who we really are.
No.
Okay?
Exactly.
And if you go back to, and I got to bring this up with you in a few seconds, but if you go back to the origins, the true origins of each and every nation, you will get chills if you go back to the indigenous people, because they had the right agenda, so to speak. They had the right concept of what life was all about. And it goes back to what you were talking about with common law versus statutory law or admiralty law. It's like, who is your creator? Who is your authority? Is it some pope that's, screwing children and then chopping off people's penises? You know, is that your authority? Okay. Or is your authority your own connection with your own, however you want to call it, God or superior, higher level, higher self?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, and the interesting thing now, Alexandra, is that we're at a shift. I mean, everyone is talking about the shift. Even some of my more obtuse relatives are coming forward and saying, you know, things are really shaking up now. I mean, even the dullest person realizes this now. So information now has a new power to it. It means it can be acted on. It isn't just the problem with the whole internet generation is we feel learning stuff, information equates action. It doesn't. It's what we then do with it. It's how it transforms us and how we change the world around us.
Yes. And I would challenge people. It's like, why are you not taking action? You know, why are you not taking action? Is it because somebody told you that you were whatever? Well, are they your authority? You know, this is where we are right now in society, is like, who really is our authority to dictate and determine who we really are? Because we are beautiful, divine sparks of light and love.
Exactly.
We need to go back to that.
It's interesting, too, Alexandra, when you look at the origin of words. Every word in the English language having to do with authority comes from the Latin language out of Rome.
Interesting.
And you look at our own indigenous roots, the Celtic, the Teutonic people in Europe, you know, the tribal peoples of Europe, they had no word for authority. In their languages, they talk about creation, they talk about Mother Earth, they talk about all this, the words of compassion and family and love come out of those languages, the tribal languages. Everything out of Rome is about authority and rule and control, right?
Wow. That is incredible. Thank you for that. I'm going to have to delve a little deeper. Now, not to backtrack, but I'm doing that again. Tell me a little bit about what is the actual ulterior motive behind the Vatican pursuing the Anglicans and the Catholics and uniting them?
Well, they've been trying to do that for centuries. I mean, they're really the same corporation. The City of London, the City of Rome, they are already one corporation.
Okay.
The royalty of England have been the legal vassals of Rome since the year 1213, when King John, just before Magna Carta, he became the vassal of Rome for financial reasons, and that was never revoked. And proof of that is when I got ordained into the United Church of Canada, which was a Protestant church, officially, set up by an act of parliament. So it was set up by the Crown of England. On my ordination certificate, it says it's part of the Holy Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting very upset about that, saying, what is this all about? And they said, oh, no, it just means universal. I said, we're not part of a universal church. We're from a Reformed free church tradition and nothing to do with Rome. The reason it says it's part of the Catholic Church is it is. It's created by an act of Parliament, which is the Crown of England, which is the Roman Church. And there's the proof right there. You see that on baptismal certificates, everything, that term. That's the way to flag to people that, yeah, it all comes out of Rome. Now, what they're doing now by formally bringing the Anglican Church back, they want the money. It's that simple. They want that the revenue. Pope Benedict went up to Edinburgh in 2010, and he got Queen Elizabeth's agreement to bring the Anglican Church clergy back into the Roman Catholic Church. And one of the conditions, he had to agree to adopt this policy of protecting child rapists called crimen solicitanus. Yeah. She agreed to that. Okay, so now every Anglican priest in England or Canada or anywhere has to protect child rapists as well. They're under that same policy. So it shows that the reunification is happening as we speak. And it's always been there, in fact. And now they're making a big thing out of it. It's that whole geopolitical kind of thing that they've got to be, monopolizing it all now because they're in trouble.
Incredible. You know, has there been any word about any kind of citizens' arrests against the Queen?
There've been attempts, actually.
That's what I thought.
There have been attempts. People did go to Buckingham Palace. They did try in various royal processions to do it. They were arrested and detained and then released. She's nervous, though. She doesn't appear much in public. They know the power of citizen arrests. Citizen arrest laws are in you look in any criminal code in America or Canada, you have that power to detain, especially a convicted felon like Elizabeth Windsor or Joseph Ratzinger or any of them.
You know, this truly is representative of the sleeping giant is awakening. Mm-hmm. And it's just so exciting. I was going to ask you, what is your idea about, you know, I stumbled upon an article that was talking about filing bankruptcy for the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. And this is back a while. But I got to thinking, is this kind of standard operating procedure if the heat gets too hot for a particular diocese, they'll just file bankruptcy, which probably chances are that money is just recouped and moved to another archdiocese?
Yeah, that's exactly what they had the assets. It's like when the churches first began to get sued here in Canada for the murder of the Indian children in their so-called schools. They all started declaring bankruptcy. You saw them close down their national offices, move into smaller facilities. They were hiding their assets and protecting them, move them out of the country. And I mean, it's part of the whole game they play.
Interesting. So it's okay for them to have their assets offshore, right?
Oh, yeah. It's okay for them to murder children and get away with it. Yeah.
Right. It's not okay for the rest of the world, you know, or at least the United States to have offshore assets. So one of the things that's very near and dear to my heart, and I don't think you and I have ever talked about this, is going back to the indigenous people. And one of the comments you made was the pronounced Ganata.
Ganata, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, I almost started crying because apparently they're drafting a new Declaration of Independence and, so on and so forth with a constitutional convention. And you had said something about that coming up on September 1st. And one of the things that really got me was when I was sent to do a major mission across the United States last summer, what I've been realizing is that I was literally sent by spirit to very specific locations and am just now having the time to be able to delve into why did I end up there and what was the significance of that area. And one of the things that I landed in was the location of the person that created the actual language behind the Cherokee and the Iroquois. And it related back to the Five Nations, the core Five Nations. And I had ended up in Oklahoma, which is where they were all unfortunately transferred to in a horrific way, I might add. And so when I was listening to you, I realized, isn't this really what came down from whether you want to call it the Jesuits or the Catholic Church or the Vatican or whomever is behind that? I mean, many say it's the Anunnaki, the Velon, you know, we could go on and on. Ultimately, there was a so-called agenda or a list of tasks to perform to slaughter all indigenous races.
Yep. So very much.
Is that pretty much the case?
I believe so. And it was all over. We had the same thing out here. I had a really amazing revelation of that when I was a clergyman in Port Alberni, which is the very west coast of Canada on Vancouver Island. And Nelson Keatla, one of the elders, he was the first native I got to come to church, and I encouraged him to get up and speak from the pulpit and that. He shared with us that long before the whites ever came, before Captain Cook showed up in the coast, Pacific coast, they had a tradition that said that Jesus had come among them as a woman and had warned them of the coming of the pale imposters, as she put it, the ones who spoke in her name but who didn't have her spirit. And they met the missionaries, the Catholic and other missionaries who were coming. And she said, welcome these people and show them the true teachings and the teachings of equality and brotherhood and sisterhood. And as part of that, it became really clear to me that that the way that the natives were targeted in this murderous manner, really a cultic manner, the way they would grab the children and torture and kill them, it's exactly what they did to any, quote, heretic. They used the same laws that they did in Europe to wipe out any so-called heresy, any power that or belief that challenged the power of Rome and Catholicism, like the Cathars, the Albigensians, the Church of Mary Magdalene, the Gnostics. All of them were wiped out in exactly the same way the natives were. They were targeted in that way because they're another, if you want to call it, another Christian belief or another way of looking at Christ that didn't conform to Rome. So they had to be targeted. So this was really a religious war. The Jesuits led it because they always led the religious wars in Europe. The Jesuits set up the Indian boarding schools. They set up the model for extermination. So, you know, this is all connected.
Wow. And you know, Kevin, this experience for me last summer, you know, it was life-changing. And especially because I was receiving visions on a continual basis as we drove through certain parts of the United States. And I was seeing the slaughter. I was seeing the desecration and the horrific atrocities that were being performed against the indigenous people. And we're talking, you know, Steve and I assisted well over 20 different tribes to return home. And that's a whole nother story. But it has left such an impact on my heart that we really are at a crossroads to return back to the teachings of the indigenous people, because they weren't related to any one specific sect, cult, religion, because we really have to be careful about religion. You know, I mean, religions were created to cause dissension, to cause separation. You know,
right, the word religio means to rebind or to tie up. It's from legate, or legio means to tie something. It means you're bound up. Yeah, it means you're tied into something.
Oh, my God. And you know that saying, like, all religious pathways lead to one, you know? Well, you know, I'm questioning all of that because, you know, there's been clearly a lot of manipulation even within the spiritual community through the RAND Corporation and things like that, just basically trying to get us to be passive when we're one of the hugest groups across the world to blaze the trail for truth.
Well, that's the corporatist model. There's two momentums in the world today. The corporatist model means it's in e pluribus unum, for many one. Mm-hmm. All the different elements go into one corporate body. That's the corporation. The other tendency is in the other direction, from one many, from one source, infinite variety, infinite liberty, and difference. And that's our model. That is the indigenous way, because in indigenous communities, whether it was here or back in Europe, our ancestors all practiced the same thing. If you're a warrior and you didn't want to go to war, you didn't go. If you were a member of the tribe and you didn't want to do something, you didn't do it. There was no authority commanding you to do it. That authority model came out of Rome, and that's the two choices facing us, right?
That's amazing, and that just once again reiterates the need to recapture and solidify your own internal authority.
Right.
This is what we're being called to do. This is the job that we're supposed to be doing right now, is regaining our, you know, not regaining because it's been there all along, but maybe acknowledging the fact that we have authority and we don't need to look to any institution to give it to us. So,
well, Jesus said that. He said the kingdom of heaven is within you. He didn't say it was within a church.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. So, you know, one of the things that's really confusing to a lot of people is just the whole hierarchy of the Catholic Church. Can you clarify how it basically presents itself? Like, you know, you're talking about Bichon is at the top, right?
Yeah, well, there's the public image, and then there's what goes on. I mean, the public image is that the Pope is the top guy.
Okay.
He interprets policy. He's God's representative on earth, all of that nonsense, right?
Right.
In reality, he's the figurehead. The body that runs things is called the Curia, which is a college of cardinals in Rome, and they're financial backers. And, you know, it's the money men and the cardinals who really run everything.
Okay, so is Adolfo Pichon, is he supposedly above Jorge Bergoglio?
No, they're both figureheads. I mean, these are the Jesuits and the Catholic Church, they're really one and the same, but they put forward these figureheads to make it seem like there's, you know, it's like in a corporation. Okay, you've got a CEO, okay? Is he ultimately in charge? Who is in charge? Corporations are set up so that there can't be any ultimate liability or responsibility.
True.
Right?
There's like a board. There's like a board of directors.
It's a collective mind. It's a hive,
mm-hmm.
right?
Correct.
So there's over, I think you could say spiritually, there's an overmind. There's an entity behind it all.
Yeah.
And that's the one we're aiming at. That's the target in this, if you like. Aiming at the entity behind it all. And it's interesting because in the Bible, when Paul is writing to the various small little churches, he never writes to the people in the church. He says, he addresses it to the angel of the church of Smyrna or whatever. He's addressing the entity behind it, right?
Mm.
Just like the entity here is what's running it, the collective hive known as the Catholic Church. It's like a corporation. Think of it as a corporation because it's the oldest corporation on the planet. They modeled the corporate system. There isn't any one person in charge because then that way the system could be brought down. Responsibility shifts around. You can never understand. It's like the Vatican Bank. It can never be audited. You can't know who its directors are, right? Nothing can be traced.
Incredible. And so basically what you're saying then is Jorge represents the Vatican, Adolfo represents the Jesuits, and Justin Welby represents the Queen of England, so to speak, right?
Pretty much, but it's all the same entity. You know, it's just got okay. different masks. You know.
Very good. I'm so glad you clarified that. Now, I wanted to throw something out at you. I went up and did a Googling on anything to do with news regarding the Vatican, and one of the news stations came up with, quote, services for this domain have been discontinued. So I thought I would throw that out there. But anyway, let's get back to this really cool proclamation that you made, that there are rewards up to 10,000 euros for information being provided if people have information on the top Vatican and government officials. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And has there been anything new that's come forth in that arena?
Well, that was made by the prosecutor's office during this case because of the evidence of the Ninth Circle. This is the sacrificial cult that operates in the Catholic Church that apparently every pope has to be a part of. It involves the ritual slaying of children at certain times of the year. The prosecution's office made this offer that any employee of the Vatican or the Crown of England or any institution that comes forward with knowledge that could lead to prosecution of people in the Ninth Circle would be spared, they would be granted immunity from prosecution. That's a very important thing to do legally because it gives people protection. It helps the insiders, the whistleblowers come forward. He also offered rewards of 10,000 euros. Up to 10,000 euros for people with information. Since then, that's when we heard from this woman.
Wow.
In Belgium. She came forward within a week after that. There's been other people kind of lesser. That's the Garda, the policeman in Ireland who told us about the Chom babies and the evidence of ritual sacrifice. He came forward as well in response to that. So it's beginning to happen, and that's what they're worried about, that the insiders are beginning to come forward. So it is definitely reaping results.
That's fantastic. And do you see that being offered across the board with the other cases, or was that just for this particular case that somebody stepped forward and offered that?
Well, it's just for this case for now, but it can be applied in any common law trial. That's one of the important things the prosecution does. you know, witness protection and also granting immunity to people if they provide evidence that can prosecute the higher ups, right?
Wow, that's great. Now, tell us a little bit about your up-and-coming trip. I know you're going to be taking off here tomorrow, I think, and you're going to be traveling all around Europe for quite a period of time, correct?
Well, Europe initially during July, but then on the way back, an equally important trip, I'm going all through America because we have groups in 31 states now, especially in the Midwest, and there's a growing number on the West Coast as well. People wanting to set up these common law courts. I'm going to be doing a lot of work all through the summer in America. Also in Canada, we're setting up, of course, as you mentioned earlier, the Republic of Granada, which is actually establishing a republic, saying the Crown of England is a criminal body. We are separated from it and from the Vatican. We're setting up this new republic in Canada. So all of that is all linked in, and I'm going to be working through that all through the summer and fall, and hopefully get out to the West Coast and see you eventually.
Yeah, you're going to be a busy, busy guy, huh?
Always.
Now, you mentioned last time that we had talked that, you know, you're having to incorporate more security around yourself when you travel. Are you actually going to be traveling with a group of people this go-around?
For most of the time, yeah. There'll be people escorting me. We're hoping to get a delegation to going into England and down to Rome. So, yeah, we've got it better organized now than we did before. But I've always relied on the spiritual protection that's clearly around me, and I trust that every day primarily.
Yeah, you have a lot of us behind you as well, so you have lots of protection behind you, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you also are going to Europe. What is your main goal in going to Europe? I thought you were actually going to do some stand-down orders.
Well, yes, we're going in to enforce these. These stand-down orders have been issued to the cops, the judges, the politicians who are protecting these criminals, Church of England, you know, in Rome and England and elsewhere. We're going to go and actively enforce these stand-down orders, and it's beginning to happen already. Like in Coventry, the folks have gone out and said to the police, you know, we're going to be occupying these Catholic churches, arresting these priests, you're to stand down, and they haven't had any opposition, which I find interesting. They know, the cops know that these are lawful orders, and they're implicated. So it's really interesting, the debate beginning to go on now among the police, because I found the same thing in Canada. When we told people that the police, that they are protecting churches that are actively trafficking children, they never intervened to stop us when we did these occupations. They stood by and watched, but they didn't actually arrest anybody. And I think it's that standing down that is our greatest weapon. And even deputizing these cops eventually to work with the common law courts, that's our ultimate goal as well with us.
So hopefully people's consciences are finally getting to them when they're in positions of power, such as the police and the sheriffs and that sort of thing. So that's great news.
And well, it's like what happens in a civil war. People have to choose sides, and you've got to either be with the people and what's just or with the criminals.
And we want that now. You know, and you mentioned that you have at least 5 existing sheriffs who have stepped up to the plate to assist you. Are you getting more than that? And if so, how's that going?
They are setting up education programs for their deputies in 3 states. I won't say which states yet.
Yeah.
But they are actually bringing in their deputies, teaching them about the common law, getting them to actually serve as the enforcement arm of our courts, which is an amazing step forward. It means that we can actually then perform arrests on these people. Once that starts happening, this whole deck of cards is going to start collapsing because they're going to know this isn't just talk. There's power behind this, right?
This is so exciting. And in fact, everybody, Kevin and I have discussed doing follow-ups on these enforcements of stand-down orders as he travels throughout Europe. So stay tuned,
yep,
because Kevin and I are going to be giving you hopefully a play-by-play offering of the progress and, of course, the victories that are occurring across the planet. Now, Kevin, what is your take on this whole thing with the latest with the Vatican coming out with the alien gods? And, you know, they're actually looking for an alien god, so to speak.
I think it's nonsense. I mean, it's like what it's more distraction, fog and mirrors, I think. And the fact that it, you know, normally if they'd say something like this, fine, and, you know, kind of interesting and all that. But the point is, it's coming out right now. It's kind of like when the Tet Offensive in Vietnam happened a few months before the so-called moon landing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want to distract people from the fact that America just had its ass kicked and was losing the Vietnam War, what do? Well, you switch everybody's attention onto the moon landing, which pumped up American prestige all over the world. They landed somebody on the moon. You know, that was not accidental. It came right after the Tet Offensive. The same thing here. They've got to shift attention away to the enormous corruption and murder, satanic rituals being performed by popes and cardinals. I mean, eyewitnesses to this coming forward. Yeah, they've got to distract people. It's just that big distraction and fog and mirrors game again.
It's interesting, too. Did you see the headline on May 13th from the Harvard University Cultural Studies Club?
No.
This was a really big deal. It says they dropped their sponsorship of the controversial Black Satanic Mass that was supposed to take place Monday evening. And it said it was flagrantly disrespectful and inflammatory, said the president. They collaborated with the Satanic Temple, said a local restaurant and nightclub owner. And it basically goes on to say that, you know, they're distancing themselves. It's a declaration of personal independence from what some see as a counterproductive cultural programming. And this is from Harvard University, Harvard. Okay.
Well, it's like when Bergoglio mentions connects child rape with satanic masses. They're all admitting it now. That's what's amazing. I mean, we even know that on August 15th, there's going to be another convening of the Ninth Circle at the, it's called the Marie Reine du Monde, which means Marie Queen of the World Cathedral in Montreal, Canada. Right in the sub-basement there, we had sources that say they're going to be sacrificing children. So we've got community sheriffs going down there to shut down that ceremony. Right.
Wow.
And this is what we've got to do now. We've got to save those children's lives. And if the cops aren't going to do it, we'll do it.
How cool is that? Now, how are you able to determine if they weren't just going to change the location?
They might, but you know, that might save lives in the process. That might keeps them on the run. It keeps them off balance. And this is what you have to do. And, you know, that when it's children's lives at stake, there's no time for glorification anymore.
Well, and on top of that, you know what this is showing also is that there's just an absolute great need to create a network of information that is fed back to Kevin so that we can save lives, you know?
Well, that helps. It also get it out widely so that if one of us is taken out, then the information keeps going. And so, yeah, exactly right. We need – and that information comes from insiders. That's where it's come from so far.
That's fantastic. And now, is this also in relation to the fact that, you know, they made that statement about the satanic black mass? I mean, talk about really admitting, you know, basically showing your guilt by making a comment such as this. I would imagine.
Well, you know, it's standard damage control. You address an issue to take the fire away from the issue in a way – so your opposition can't exploit it. You know, it's kind of like if a corporate executive is caught having sex with the secretary, he jokes about it, says, oh, yeah, we do that all the time. You diffuse the issue. Well, by analogy, that's what they're doing. They're addressing the issue to diffuse it so that when somebody mentions satanic mass, it's kind of in a, you know what I mean? It's kind of like in that controlled manner already. And they do the same thing, too, when you notice. There's here's a classic example. There's this movie out there, kind of a dumb comedy called Rat Race, and in it, it's supposedly a comedy about all these people running to get this money, and they're in a competition to do it. But in the course of that comedy, they mention human trafficking, child rape, organ trafficking, murder. All of that is talked about, but it's always in a ha-ha humorous context. This is how they do it. They surround it with their own veneer, and then they believe that's how you diffuse an issue.
Wow. And that's just such classic modus operandi, even with when you review all of their articles within, like, the Vatican News and things like that. It's very interesting to see the response of the article to what you're doing. So, for example, you know, if it gets really hot, you know, regarding child trafficking, then all of a sudden the Pope will come out and he'll do an entire mass on how terrible right. child trafficking is. You know?
Well, at the same time, saying to the Italian bishops that it's fine if you don't report child rape to the police, which he said just last month. So he says one thing in the church, yes, cover up child rape. And then the public says, no, no, we're against child rape. You know, it's a two-faced lie going on.
Very interesting. And one last thing, because I know we're getting close to the end of the time here, but I thought this was interesting. This comes from the book of the Zohar. Are you familiar with that text?
It strikes a bell. Totally.
Okay. And it says, it's a time to lead to the destruction of Rome. The emergence of the Messiah will appear on the world. And what I find interesting is that the Messiah can also be defined as the liberator.
Well, that thing to understand about these references is they're not talking about individuals. Like the Antichrist isn't an individual. It's a place called Rome, that according to the book of Revelation. Just like the Messiah is in one person, it's a spirit. We are the Messiah, that spirit arising within us. That's what they're referring to, I believe.
Very good. And think of that. That can be interpreted multiple ways, because the liberator is, once again, are we liberating ourselves to be who we really are? Or are we liberating the planet so that it can be, you know, living amongst multiple races, you know, creeds, et cetera, where we all live in a peaceful, harmonic way? I mean,
I think all of the above.
Yeah, exactly. Or is it liberating from this maniacal, diabolical, reptilian-oriented, blood sacrificial faction that has infiltrated in every sector of the world? We need to wake up and realize that they are pervasive and they are all over the place. You know?
That's right.
But, well, okay, now to tie things up, give us your information for contacting you.
Mm-hmm. It's the basic website is itccs.org. That's International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, itccs.org. You can contact me, hiddenfromhistory1. That's number one, hiddenfromhistory1 @gmail.com. Especially in America, I'll be coming back late July, all through August and September, being all over America. So please write to me if you want me to come to your community and help with the common law or any of these other issues. And I would just say, you know, like to everybody listening, what you just said, it's within us and the responsibility of each one of us.
Big time. And, you know, we are really being called by spirit to be accountable. And that's not accountable for the atrocities that they're doing. It's accountable for the fact that we now know they're going on. And
that's right.
So what little piece of effort can you make a difference? And then,
right.
then you feel fulfilled and you are accountable. So,
and also recognize that our priorities in our life have to change from kind of the 9-to-5, take care of myself attitude, to now we have responsibility for all of us, our planet, our children, every child living. And it's a permanent job. It's our real life purpose when you discover this. And that's what's so liberating and fun about it, that, wow, this is why I'm here.
Yes, yes. In fact, we were just talking about this yesterday, about the whole thing, you know, you read within the spiritual community that we are all one. Well, are we really? Yes, we're all one when it comes to the divine spark, which there's a percentage of the population that is not of the divine spark, period.
Yeah.
And we accept that.
That is true. And in fact, we're not even talking a majority. All you need is a certain creative act of minority, and this thing will shift.
Correct.
Doesn't even take a lot. It's never about numbers. It's about content and spirit.
So for all of you out there that really want to make a difference just within your own lives, hey, start setting up your own small groups. If you want face-to-face or you want meetups or you want email or forums or what have you, if you really want to make a difference and start reaching out to people that are on the same wavelength as you. This is a big thing, Kevin. Is that for those of us that know what we know, it's very difficult for us to be able to walk and survive literally and function within the actual, you know, society
right.
we walk in. It's very, very challenging for people.
Well, nor should we. We shouldn't have to worry. We should let the old fall and die and create the new. And even if it means writing me, I have in touch with a massive network of people all over the world who are on board with this. So just contact me and we will connect you up, just like we are with all the common law activists all over America now.
And I also want to make one last comment, and that is I received a message from someone the other day, and they said, gosh, you know, all this news, it's so depressing. You know, I'm so sad. And I wrote back and I said, why? Because, you know, what it's showing is that not only is everybody jumping from the ships, but they're also fighting amongst themselves. I guess one of the Rockefellers was found. Did you hear about that? He was shot in
That's
the head.
Right.
Well, there's a very good indication right there that things are really heating up, and it's because of all of us opening our eyes and refusing to take this anymore. We are making an energetic stance. So keep up the good work, everybody. And Kevin, as usual, I just love you. I thank you. You're like a brother to me. And I can't wait to support you on your journey through Europe. I think it's going to be really exciting.
I look forward to talking to you again probably, July 1st or so. We'll talk to you from most likely Ireland and then give you reports along the way as well. And hopefully see you real soon.
Sounds good. And thanks, everybody, for listening. I think that we got a lot of good information today, as always. And you take care. We'll talk to you next week on the other side. Take care. Bye.